Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us on Trumpet Radio Live 101.3 KPCG online. KPCG.fm, live link here at thetrumpet.com as well. This is Trumpet Radio Live, the Wednesday edition. Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon with you here today. Coming up on today's program, a look at some of the immigration here in the United States. That's been an ongoing topic. There's a census report out. You might find some of the numbers surprising. Also, a quick review of the vice presidential debate from Tuesday evening. That and more, this edition of Trumpet Radio Live 101.3 KPCG.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Welcome back to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com. And don't forget about the TuneIn app, which is a nice place to listen to the programming as well. Just go to TuneIn and search KPCG, and we will come up right there. There will be pictures of myself and Grant Turgeon. Well, maybe not. It might just be the station logo. But maybe we should get our pictures up there.
Probably, if we're as famous as we think we are.
People always want to know what the radio personalities look like. And then there's that famous expression where they say, you have a face for radio. Meaning that you should not be on TV or on a camera. But that's not the case with us. We're at least average.
Well, I'd say we're quite good looking,
yeah,
actually.
Better than average. What am I talking about? So hopefully you're having a great Wednesday. Lots of interesting things to cover on today's program. One of the big things that's going on is that really massive storm there on the East Coast. Hurricane Matthew continues destructive path towards the U.S. There's been 11 killed so far in the Caribbean. So quite a bit happening there with that storm. It's been in the headlines over the last few days, and they're thinking now it might finally start to hit the United States. Hurricane Matthew passed over Cuba on Wednesday and continued its destructive path toward the Bahamas and the U.S., leaving behind a trail of devastation that includes at least 11 deaths. Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina have each declared a state of emergency. And so, of course, whenever they do that, the stores clear out of all the food. So people are packing up and getting their stuff ready for this. What could be a pretty severe storm. They say that it's a Category 3 storm right now, tracking north at 8 miles per hour with 125 mile per hour winds. So that's pretty intense.
Yeah, something that we can't even really understand living here in landlocked Oklahoma. I've never been anywhere near a place where a hurricane was happening or even has happened recently. So that's just something I read about and can't really visualize too well.
So they're going to have to watch for, of course, all the things that come with those storms, including the winds, obviously, a lot of rain. They say a turn northwestward is expected today, with the threat eventually shifting to the southeast United States. Forecast models are still showing increasing chances that Matthew will come very close to the eastern shores of Florida on Thursday and into Friday. No Atlantic storm on record has packed such powerful winds for such a prolonged period of time as Matthew, which I found to be sort of surprising. Mainly, I guess, because it hasn't been like the top story. It's been in the top few stories, but it's been going on for a while, and I thought it was kind of maybe fading out. But no, that's not the case. This is actually the strongest one on record in the Atlantic as far as such powerful winds for such a prolonged period of time. And it's 125 miles an hour still.
That has potential to be extremely devastating. I wonder how far you must be inland to avoid the effects of a hurricane. Probably, I don't know, like 10, at least 10 or 20 miles maybe, well, if not more than that.
Yeah, even, yeah, right. I mean, it depends, I suppose. You know, the further inland you get, the less the repercussions. Mm-hmm. I mean, even here in Oklahoma, occasionally we'll get rain that is a remnant of a hurricane that comes mm-hmm. into Texas. So, you know, we're technically getting some of it, but for us, it's a rainstorm.
Yeah, not like a whole lot of damage there.
Right.
Yeah.
But they say here that Matthew currently spans some 700 miles.
Ooh.
With hurricane force winds extending 40 miles from the storm's center and tropical storm winds extending some 160 miles outward. That's huge. It's amazing. If you can imagine, I was just thinking about that. If you had to drive through it, you know, you had to drive 700 miles through a storm, that would be just, I mean, unthinkable. Usually, you know, you can drive through a storm if it's, you know, a decent thunderstorm in maybe 30 minutes, maybe an hour at the most. But 700 miles of this is just unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's kind of scary to think about driving through that, because even 30 or 40 mile per hour winds have swayed my car back and forth on the highway before. So 125 mile per hour winds, you can imagine that just blowing a car off course.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to be out there on a boat, obviously, in the water. Oh. Or you know, even if this comes inland, I don't know how strong the winds will be, but certainly they're telling people to be careful. More than 1 million people were ordered to prepare to leave the coast in South Carolina, in a swath of the state that spans 100 miles inland from the shore. Florida, Georgia, and North Carolina also ordered coastal communities to evacuate. So I guess there won't be any protesters there when the storm comes. No one will be protesting the hurricane like they've been protesting the police lately in some of those areas.
Yeah, it seems like the enemy will not just stop because of the protesting in this case. So hurricane's coming no matter what people think about it. And it is kind of like we have to choose which natural disaster is the least harmful, maybe, when we choose where to live in this country, because we have fires and droughts in some places, gigantic floods in others, and then tornadoes and hurricanes. And it's just a matter of which one you think would be the least devastating.
Yeah, that's really true. That almost every area has something that people have to be on guard against. The storm, of course, has gone through the Bahamas, the southwestern islands earlier today, where residents were bracing for hurricane force winds, a storm surge up to 15 feet and as much as 15 inches of rain. Bahamas Prime Minister Perry Christie voiced concern about the potential impact on the sprawling archipelago off Florida's east coast. He said, "We're worried because we do not control nature," which is, of course, true. And as you were just highlighting there, Grant, there are natural disasters anywhere, really, that you live. It just depends on what they are. We have a really good write-up at the trumpet.com. It's a free book. It's a small booklet, actually, Why Natural Disasters. And that's a really good one to get and take a look at some of the causes of these disasters. We kind of take it, I guess, as sort of normal because we do see them. But, you know, there were people that die in those. Like, even in this storm, they talked about, 11 people have died so far.
Mm.
You know, and so, you know, some people stop and ask, well, wait a second now. You know, why do people die in this? And when they think about God and they think about natural disasters and people dying, it's a good question. And the answers to that are in this free booklet on why natural disasters is at thetrumpet.com. And I give you some good insight into that. So if you're living on the East Coast, and we do have quite a few listeners online in those areas at kpcg.fm, be careful. Hopefully yeah, you're all right.
Hopefully evacuated if necessary.
Yeah. We know some people down in the Bahamas, too, that listen online. So hopefully they're doing all right as well. It's always a concern in those areas. Did you watch the vice presidential debate last night?
No, I was deep in hibernation after that long trip home yesterday. So I'm going to watch it in full replay, though, today.
Okay.
So I'll have some comments on that later, I guess.
I knew it was on, and yet I didn't care. I just couldn't muster the strength to watch that. I read a book instead. But here's just the brief recap from the Washington Post: winners and losers from the vice presidential debate. And Washington Post is pretty liberal, but they said Mike Pence actually won it. So Tim Kaine must have been really bad.
Yeah.
Washington Post says that he won it. Not that it matters for a whole lot, I guess. But this is what their take anyway. They say the winner was Mike Pence. They said from the very beginning, Pence was the more comfortable of the two men on the debate stage. Pence repeatedly turned to the camera when he answered questions, making clear he understood that the real audience wasn't in the room but watching on TV, except for you and me. The Indiana governor was calm, cool, and collected throughout, a stark contrast to the fast-talking and seemingly nervous Kane. So I guess they're sort of judging this on personalities and the way they came across. I didn't read much about any sort of solutions being offered for anything, but it's, I guess, more of a personality contest. Tim Kaine, which I just don't like that name for some reason. Tim Kaine, it just doesn't resonate with me, but that's irrelevant. I'm just saying it's not my favorite. They said he was the loser, according to Washington Post. Someone must have told the Virginia senator he needed to always be on his front foot in the debate, always be the aggressor. It didn't work. They said Kaine started the debate talking so quickly and trying to load so many Trump attacks into every answer that it made it virtually impossible to grasp any one attack. They said in the middle of the debate, Kaine seemed to relax into it, delivering an effective attack on Trump's comments on women. But that was the exception with Kaine, not the rule. When he was trying to stuff about 10 pounds of attack into a 5-pound bag in his answers, they say when he wasn't doing that, he was relentlessly interrupting Pence. Every single time Pence started to level an attack against Hillary Clinton, Kaine immediately began to talk over him. The writer says, I'm not sure if that was on purpose or not, but it didn't come across well at all. One glaring example, as Pence was recounting his personal experience on September 11th, 2001, Kaine interrupted him to say, I was in Virginia. He says, not a good look.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, take that for what it is. They're not really talking about any of their solutions here, but they are talking about the interrupting nature of some of these debates. And I've seen that on a lot of them. And it reminds me of little kids on the playground. If one starts saying something about the other one, you know, and they cover their ears and they just start making sounds, or they say, I know you are, but what am I? Over and over again. That's really what it's kind of turned into. And I think there was even a comment, maybe it was even on this article, where they said it does seem like just two kids throwing mashed potatoes at each other. That's what our debates have descended into.
I saw that someone actually counted Tim Kaine interrupting Mike Pence 70 times, and I'm sure Mike Pence interrupted Tim Kaine a lot as well. And then also the debate moderator from CBS, she asked 8 hard questions, what they call hard questions, to Mike Pence, and only 1 to Tim Kaine. And it was a bit deceiving because her first hard question was directed at Kaine, and then 8 in a row went at Pence. So we had a little bit of hope here that it might be balanced until it completely turned its head and headed toward Mike Pence.
And maybe the moderator thought that people would only watch the first couple minutes, so she'd get that yeah. one question in to make it seem more balanced and then go from there. Really sad state of affairs, I think, when it comes to those debates. So, you know, if you had the stomach for it, and you listened to it and watched it, well, then I'm sure you've got your own opinions, but I just didn't have it in me. I just didn't, you know, you can only watch kids argue so long before you're like, that's enough. Everyone be quiet. You talk. Okay, now you talk. You need like really like a referee there instead of a moderator. Blow mm-hmm. the whistle. You know, that's time out for you. Let this man talk and then you talk.
Again, it's a clear sign of insecurity to interrupt someone that many times. It just shows that you're uncomfortable with the other person's side. If you're so sure you're right, just let that person talk and then prove the person wrong after he's done speaking. Why don't we see more of that? It just must be because they're afraid to get destroyed by the other person's point before they have a chance to rebut it.
Yeah, it seems like that is the case. And, you know, it seems like each candidate, whether it's in the presidential debate or the vice presidential debate, it's almost like their stance is that they are completely right on everything and the other side is completely wrong on everything. And that's not possible. They're probably both right on some things and both wrong on some things. And that's just the truth of it. So mm-hmm. Interesting to see, I guess, 2 more presidential debates. So I'll have to rest up, stretch out, hit the weight room,
yeah.
prepare myself for the onslaught that is yet to come.
I'm ready to watch this one on replay after my deep hibernation. I feel rejuvenated today and ready to take a little bit of a mental beating from that debate.
It'd be an interesting study to see like what it does, what watching the debates do to the health of the average viewer, like the stress levels, and if it harms or helps. My guess is it doesn't help.
Yeah, my heart was beating fast the entire first presidential debate, and I thought maybe in a way this might be helpful, getting my heart rate up for a while. It's like 2 hours of exercise when I'm not even moving.
Yeah, I have to admit that during the first presidential debate, for some reason, I was for the most part seated, but at times I would stand up. And I'll do that during sporting contests. Sometimes when it gets exciting, I just kind of stand up. And I found myself doing that, and I'm like, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. Sit back down. And then inevitably, I have to throw in my two cents. Nobody's listening, but I need to say something.
Throwing your remote through the TV screen. Yeah. You're so angry.
Yeah, it's, there's that show Mystery Science Theater where they would just make comments about, like, movies and things. Mm-hmm. And they should do like a Mystery Science Theater debate where you don't actually hear what they're saying. You just hear like you just watch them and then hear like somebody else's commentary. I should start that. See if I can get anybody to follow me.
Great idea.
Here's something that's kind of interesting. There is this what they call a Scrooge-like tendency in human beings and it's called the fundamental attribution error. Have you ever heard of that before?
No.
Fundamental attribution error. And they explain it like this. When somebody cuts us off in traffic, shows up late, or otherwise offends us, we often reflexively attribute it to an intrinsic characteristic of the person. You know, they're just they're lazy, or they're a jerk, or whatever. They say, yet when we inconvenience others, we generally blame outside forces. I was busy. I didn't see the car there, whatever it might be. And they call that the fundamental attribution error, that we attribute the worst possible characteristics or causes for somebody's actions, I guess, to other people. And then ourselves, we give a free pass. I'm a good guy. I just didn't see him there. That's why I cut him off in traffic. But if we get cut off in traffic, it's because that guy's got a problem, right? I think we can all relate to that.
That actually happened to me the other night in Portland. The person driving our car had accidentally gotten into the lane going straight through the intersection, but wanted to turn left. And all the lights were green still. He was just waiting to turn into the left lane and then get through the intersection going left. And a car pulled out in the left lane just far enough to block him from getting in that lane, and then stopped while the left lane light was still green. And every time our car tried to go around him, he'd go a little bit further out into the intersection so our car couldn't turn left. In that case, most certainly this guy was trying to just block us and had a little bit of time on his hands to screw with somebody, because clearly the light was green and he was stopping in the intersection while he was looking at us.
There are times when, there is an issue there.
But at the same time, I could just see that being a little bit funny. And maybe he's not just a horrible person in general. That's obviously not a nice thing to do, though.
Right. This happened to me the other day at one of the shopping centers. It was me and another person, and both of us had a fundamental attribution error. Because... you kind of meet at a intersection of an aisle. Who's going to go? And so the lady that was there, she looked, I think, at my wife, and it was kind of like, who's going to go? And then my wife went, and then a couple of my kids went, and then I was still there. I wasn't really paying attention to what was happening. And then I noticed the lady, and she kind of gestured like, well, just go ahead. But it was very sarcastic. So then I thought, well, come on, lady. I just kept going, but I didn't like it. So I attributed that to her being a bad person, and she attributed it to me being a bad person. So both of us, fundamental attribution error. There's another name for that. It's called human nature. And we have a good write-up at thetrumpet.com about that, a booklet. Human nature, what is it? Really good read on that, but I thought it was an interesting way to scientifically explain, I guess, or name what we do as humans, which is usually assume the worst about somebody else and give ourselves a pass.
That's a really good point, and I like how they have a name for that, too. That's happened to me, too, where I've cut someone off, and the other person gets really angry with me, and I'm thinking, wow, I didn't mean to do that on purpose. You know, that was not my intention to infuriate you. And yet this is how you're responding to me. But if I was in that situation getting cut off, I wouldn't like it either. So it is true that we always think the best of ourselves and the worst of someone else. And then speaking of that issue with the shopping cart and then picking an aisle, if both people have a shopping cart, you should just pick a side and go. And then if there's a head-on collision, it is what it is. Like, cause you're not going to get hurt that much from it. It's just shopping carts colliding. I think that would actually be quite humorous.
they should put like bumpers on them. So it's like bumper carts.
Cause we're always just standing there like, oh, I don't know which way you're going to go. I don't know which way I want to go. And then we just stand there faking back and forth like we're going to pick, and it takes several seconds.
Yeah. And people get into the shopping zone, you know, where it's like they're focused on looking for whatever that item is, and they don't realize that they have stopped in the middle of traffic with a cart blocking every possible movement, and everyone thinks, oh, come on, that's the worst person ever.
Play some bumper carts.
Yeah. Fundamental attribution error. That's kind of an interesting term for that. We talked the other day about a very vital story, the clownpocalypse, where these people are dressing like clowns and running around. Now there's a backlash to it. While you were sleeping last night, and most of us were, some of the students at Penn State weren't. Of course they weren't. Penn State students totally lose it after clown sighting. They say it was a modern-day witch hunt, or in this case, a clown hunt. This is from the New York Post. Scores of rioting Penn State students sparked pandemonium early Tuesday. I guess this was Tuesday evening. When they flooded the campus and downtown streets after word quickly spread online that the nationwide rash of creepy clown sightings had hit the area. But the students weren't going to take this lying down. Videos posted to social media showed hundreds of rowdy students chanting and running through the streets after midnight on the hunt for the alleged bozos. Twitter user Addison Carson posted a video of the mob scene with the caption, "Three clowns spotted at PSU allegedly. So naturally, 6,000 kids mobbed the streets to hunt it down. I love Penn State."
Well, hopefully this will stop the clownpocalypse if they're realizing that they could possibly get chased by 6,000 rabid students.
They said instead of pitchforks, some rioting students carried tennis rackets, lacrosse sticks, baseball bats, and hockey sticks as they poured through the area hoping to spot the clowns.
Ooh.
In one video on Instagram, the crowd can be seen running as someone calls out, "Where are the clowns at?" The caption on the post read, "When someone posts in the PSU 2020 Facebook group that there is a clown, along with the hashtag Penn State Clown Mob." Another Twitter video shows a throng of students holding flashlights gathered around a tree on the college campus as one student in the tree falls out. So they are taking matters into their own hands at Penn State and chasing down clowns with baseball bats, hockey sticks, lacrosse sticks, and tennis rackets. So beware.
This might be the time for the clowns to change. Just get out of their costumes. Sneak into the woods, get out of their costumes, come out, act like nothing happened.
Try to join the mob. So that was an interesting situation at Penn State. There was another video, I guess, of one student telling the crowd, "No matter what our political affiliation or what our differences are, we can agree on one thing. We want to get that bleeping clown."
So, agreed.
In a way,
get rid of the clowns.
In a way, it's brought everyone together, hasn't it?
It's nice to hear that we can agree on a rare one or two things.
That should come up in the next presidential debate. You know, ask both of them, "What do you think about clowns?" And see, you know.
A momentous display of solidarity when both candidates resoundingly agree on the issue.
we all can agree on one thing. We don't like the clowns. So that was kind of an interesting story. And, of course, that was happening there at Penn State. I think that was Tuesday night into early in the morning.
So a little bit. Well, oh, so this was early Wednesday morning or early Tuesday morning?
I believe so, because I think it was late Tuesday night, and then since it went over midnight. So I do think it was when we were sleeping last night in our beds. There was a mob of angry students chasing clowns at Penn State.
I feel like I just missed out big time.
Yeah. I could see kind of getting caught up in the hoopla.
Oh, yeah.
You see an angry mob and you're like, hey, what's going on here? You know, we're chasing a clown. You know, I'd probably want to get in on that, I guess.
I would want to see the clown. I would want to make the sighting. Yeah. Maybe not see it get beaten to death, but I would like to see the clown first.
Well, you know how it is. When a crowd gets excited and they get going, everyone's going to think they saw something.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's not really a lot of indication that they even found anybody. I think they were just chasing around. So anyway, there were a couple of people that posted saying it was hard to run in the clown shoes. I don't know if they were just making a joke or they were actually out there. But
as clowns, it was hard to run in clown shoes.
It's hard to run in these shoes, they said. Understandable. Make sure you listen for the Key of David program coming up here in a bit on KPCG. Two programs for you today. And then following that, we have the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. A couple of topics today. He was talking about how many Christian denominations are beginning to rally behind the Catholic Church. The Bible prophesies that that will happen. There will be a coming together of those various denominations. And that is happening, and he has some reports about that. And, of course, the main fight between ideologies today is very broad. It's you know, Islam versus, well, I guess you'd call it Christianity, but really Catholicism because you have the Vatican there. And so those are the battles that are raging, and more is happening with that. So that's a really important event to watch, these churches coming back together, and that's talked about today in the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. And also then, Stephen Fleury gives you a recap of the Seven Laws of Success that was written by Herbert W. Armstrong. He has some audio clips of Mr. Armstrong talking about those laws of success at one of the meetings that he had overseas with, I believe it was a company. And so some really good information there as well. So those topics and more on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today. If you can't catch that live, you can always catch the archives at kpcg.fm or the replay here on 101.3. This is an interesting story that you have for us, Grant. This is from the Washington Examiner. They've done a census here. A record 42.4 million immigrants, 23% of school kids, and Muslims the biggest jump. So there's been quite an influx of immigrants into the U.S., and mostly Muslims.
Yeah, it was shocking to see this story. 42.4 million immigrants, both legal and illegal, are in America. That's more than ever before. And it's fueled by a massive flood of immigrants from Muslim nations. The growing numbers are substantially impacting public services like public schools. There are actually 10.9 million students from immigrant households in public schools. That's 23% of all public school students. And it doesn't say here how many of those students might be illegal, but still, in general, 10.9 million or 23% from immigrant households.
That's quite a bit. That's quite a change, I guess, from recent years. I mean, we always have some of that. There's always a lot of immigration here in the United States, which can be a good thing. But we've seen this surge lately. And it's a topic that comes up during the presidential debates. I'd like to see it come up a little bit more. They haven't really talked about it as much, except for like the very volatile rhetoric that, you know, a big wall is going to be built and keep everybody out and that type of thing. But we do have some real numbers here to think about. This obviously takes a toll on quite a few things. It takes a toll on the economy. It takes a toll on just the classrooms and the ability to educate people because of these swelling numbers. And it's a lot of different ideologies mixing together, too.
Right. Yeah, even when I went to public school, I don't know.
Back in the 1800s?
Yeah, 10 years ago or something like that. It wasn't too pleasant because a lot of the kids didn't even speak English. And it's kind of confusing as to why they would even be in the same school as us when obviously all the classes are given in English. So how are they going to learn anything there?
Did they sit in the same class with you, or would they have different classes?
They did sit in the same class with us, and maybe they understood some things, but I always heard them speaking Spanish. I didn't ever hear a lot of kids speaking English ever. And it just kind of makes you wonder, how would they do writing a paper when they don't know more than a few phrases in English? And that was that was 10 years ago. Now it's, of course, a lot more. And it's not just those who speak Spanish. There are plenty of people coming in. This article draws attention to the fact that even though the border is open down south on the border with Mexico, the biggest percentage increases are actually from largely Muslim nations. So, of course, millions are pouring in over our southern border. But now we're having a gigantic increase in Muslim immigration as well. That should be somewhat alarming when we see the terrorist attacks in San Bernardino and Orlando and thwarted attacks in New York, another one in Minnesota. So we're having Islamic terrorist attacks across the country and plenty more thwarted. I think there's even 100 terrorist suspects on the national watch list right now. So there are a lot of different Islamic threats, but those are the people who are coming over more than ever.
Yeah, I saw a headline the other day about how many refugees have come in from Syria that have been brought into the U.S., and a very small number of those were identified as Christian. Most were Muslim. So, again, you know, it is a different ideology. That is a different way of thinking, and there are some problems that are coming because of that. So, but nothing has been done that I'm aware of to try to stem that flow into the country. If anything, it's been increased. And so, sure, I mean, if you want to say 999 out of 1,000 are fine, great. But one terrorist it causes problems. We've seen it in Europe, and we see it here in the U.S. as well. And it's interesting, too, because with some of the more recent terror attacks, the media has been quick to say, well, they're citizens and this and that. Well, technically, sure, but they lived in other parts of the world in the Middle East for quite some time and have been here, you know, for a few years, but still very different thinking. And in some cases, it's led to some real problems.
That's right. And the obvious question to ask here when we're talking about imports from Muslim nations, why are they almost all Muslim when Christians over there are being massacred? It's something like 95% of all the ones coming over are Muslim. The Christians are the ones who are in far more trouble. They're all going through the same things over there, suffering in wars. But on top of that, the Christians are being killed because they're Christians, outside of there even being a war there. Those are the ones who need it far more. So why are we not bringing those ones over the most? There is somewhat of a sinister motive for that. There has to be, because it just makes no sense otherwise. It says here that the countries with the largest increases in immigrants living here in the U.S. now from 2010 to 2014 were Saudi Arabia, up 93%, Bangladesh up 37%, Iraq up 36%, Egypt up 25%, and then Pakistan, India, and Ethiopia all up 24%. And again, almost all of them are Muslims.
Yeah, you'd think they would try for some sort of like a 50-50 split as far as bringing people over. And I suppose they would say, well, the highest percentage of people over there are Muslim, therefore, you know, it is what it is. But it is interesting because the numbers are so heavily stacked in favor of those that are Muslim. And it's just interesting because we are trying to stop terrorism here in the United States. And yet more and more people are coming in. And these are, I would assume, a lot of the ones they're talking about, especially ones that we've brought over. Well, at least I guess we sort of know somewhat who they are. Somebody knows. But then there's all those that just come through illegally. They don't know who they are.
Mm.
And all of that, all of those things are issues, and that nobody wants to really touch it because it's a sensitive topic, especially, like, say, in the political debates, although Donald Trump's been a little more straightforward. But what are you going to do? How are you going to solve the problem of terrorism? You know, the media would like us to believe that it's all homegrown, but I haven't seen a lot of that. Most of it has been imported.
Right. I mean, I don't think of the U.S. as a breeding ground for Islamic radicalism like the Middle East is. It's clearly a different society here, and a lot of those beliefs that they have are hostile to this way of life. I don't think there's any fear of Christian immigrants coming over here and setting off bombs in our cities. So even if 999 out of 1,000 Muslim immigrants are clean, what about the other one? There is always the threat of that ideology producing terrorists, no matter how few may come over in the immigration flood. Christians, I don't think there's much of a concern there. That is not something that Christians do. They're not suicide bombers or anything like that. That's just reality, and people can dismiss that as bigotry all they want to, but that is what we've seen repeatedly, even in this country.
Yeah, it's not part of the ideology. It is part of the other ideology to a large extent. It's interesting, too, because really I think what it's doing in some ways, too, is it's forcing the Vatican, is forcing Europe to become sort of this safe spot for Christians. Now, it's not right now. Obviously, they're having a lot of problems. But, you know, they need someplace to go. And if the U.S. isn't going to be hospitable, well, where would they go for help, for protection? Well, you'd start to look over at the Vatican, wouldn't you? And you'd start to look over at Europe, because the Vatican has a lot of power in Europe. And that does, in some ways, tie into the Trump A Daily Radio Show about how they're all kind of coming back, all these different denominations coming back into the fold. And really, you're just, people are rallying to their base of support. You're going to go where you're wanted and where there are other people that think like you and support what you're doing. And so we see these camps dividing.
Yeah, here we are importing our ancient enemies, in many cases, people who hate Western civilization. We see some of the same problems in Europe, but at least they're bringing in Christians too, in a lot of cases. It seems like we're specifically targeting Muslims to bring in. That's insanity. There is no other way to describe it. Why would we keep out the Christians and bring in the Muslims? It's amazing how nice we've been to really our historic enemies the last 8 years. And this is just another part of that trend. This article says here that 18.7 million immigrants arrived in this country just from since 2000 up until 2014. And from 2010 to 2014, there were 5.6 million. So 5.6 million in the span of 5 years coming into this country. And then it also says here that immigrants account for more than 1 in 8 U.S. residents. That's really stunning to think of. When you think of it that way, we're talking about immigrants, not people who came here at the start of this country, Europeans who all basically blended and now consider themselves primarily Americans. We're talking about people who don't assimilate once they come here. And that's where you have all these divided societies, camps like you were talking about, different types of people all in one place. And in a way, that's nice. But if we don't all consider ourselves primarily Americans, there are going to be some serious ideological divides there.
Right, and that's sort of the radical left argument for bringing in people. They say, well, everybody is an immigrant. You know, we all came from somewhere. But, of course, they're not understanding what's talked about in the United States and Britain in prophecy, which really highlights why we are where we are today in this country as far as the people that have come over. But also, people that came here from Europe or even from some other places at the start of the United States, they wanted to build a country. They wanted to build a life for themselves. They weren't coming here to attack and tear down, you know, Western civilization. Yeah. They were coming to build something. Now, you know, a lot of cases, maybe people think the same way. They're coming to build something, but they're coming to build something different, or they're trying to build something different. And as much as people want to pretend like everybody gets along, there is very different thinking in the Muslim group and then in the so-called Christian group, as the world would see it. Very different thinking there, very different. And well, at the end of the day, the goal is the same. Everybody wants to dominate and rule the world. Mm-hmm. But there is a difference in the way that people just even live their day-to-day lives. And so you see clashes. Monday, I was talking about it just briefly. Germany's seen more and more these skirmishes in their towns between the Muslim immigrants and the Christians that live there. So Europe's more on edge about it. But again, sadly, wherever that those refugees end up, they usually are stirring trouble. And the main reason is because they're pushing their way on everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big difference between people that came here initially and then the ones that are coming in now.
Yeah, the sobering reality of it is that immigrants who came here at the start of this nation really did come here to live the American dream and to become successful, even become rich in a lot of cases, support themselves in a way that was truly impossible in other parts of the world. Now, and it's largely now, it's because of an expansion of government programs. Immigrants in a lot of cases are more of a burden on society because they can come here, and it says here that almost one third of children in poverty are immigrants, one third without health insurance. That creates an enormous challenge for the nation's schools, healthcare system, and physical infrastructure. The large share of immigrants who arrive as adults with relatively few years of schooling is the primary reason so many live in poverty, use welfare programs, and lack health insurance. So we're bringing in people who are adults without education. Their children aren't much better off, and they are relying on government support, which really wasn't possible at the start of this country.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and that ties into this other headline I have. California petitions to become first state to offer Obamacare to illegal immigrants. Illegal immigrants. It says California's healthcare exchange is requesting that it be allowed a waiver from Obamacare regulations in order to allow illegal immigrants to buy insurance on the exchange. Buy insurance, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, which would make California the first state to extend Obamacare to illegal immigrants. Critics have objected to the plan, saying it is the latest sign the federal government misrepresented the purpose of the law. This is the first step in another misrepresentation of the Affordable Care Act. Ira Melman, a spokesman for the Federation for American Immigration Reform, told U.S. News and World Report in June, it was sold to the American people on the fact that you wouldn't have to subsidize health care for illegal immigrants. The issue of whether Obamacare would be available to illegal immigrants was highly contentious in the debate building up to the law's passage in 2010. In an address to a joint session of Congress in 2009, the president said Obamacare would not apply to illegal immigrants. And that's when Joe Wilson shouted, "You lie." And Obama immediately responded, "That's not true. That's not true." Well, It looks like it's about to be true. Because California, as this headline says, petitioning to become the first state to offer Obamacare to illegal immigrants. So what does that mean? That means that as a taxpayer, your money will be taken and redistributed to pay for illegal immigrants.
That is just shocking. And he did lie. That it's being proven now. The fact that this law is open to distributing health care to illegal immigrants shows that he was lying this whole time. And, you know, really what that should be used as is a trap for illegal immigrants to reveal themselves so that if we have any sort of law-abiding ways in this country, we would deport every one of them. I mean, I can't think of another nation that just allows people to come to their nation for free without doing any of the paperwork or paying any of the fees that come with it, and then they can stay and they can receive all of the benefits that come with being poor in that nation, even though you're an illegal. How does that even happen?
Well, this is a flashing neon enter illegal sign.
Yeah.
Because, you know, how can you on one hand say, well, you know, it's illegal immigration, and then on the other hand, well, we'll give you health care if you come here illegally. It's insanity. It makes no sense. And, you know, we're $20 trillion in debt plus, depending on the numbers you look at. There's no money for this to give illegal immigrants health care. Why stop there? Why don't we just give health care to the entire world? We'll just pay for everybody's health care all around the world. Then they could stay home. They wouldn't have to come over here.
That's where it's getting to. I think the idea is to get rid of all national borders and have a society with one big world government. That's the dream of communism anyway, is to just have one society all united. They call it a utopia, but really it's a dystopia. It just cannot work. No. And we're going to see that very soon. All of these ideas are going to come crashing down.
Yeah, it's amazing. And the other thing about this story about the Obamacare going to the illegal immigrants potentially is that they say they're requesting, California's requesting a waiver from Obamacare regulations. That's the thing. They pass a law, but then they just hand out waivers left, right, and you know, center to anybody. Right. Oh, you want a waiver? I'll give you a waiver. Well, is it the law or is it not the law? Is it the law unless they decide to change it, which we've seen happen with Obamacare multiple times? There's no law. It's the rule of a dictator. Here's my law that everyone has to follow. You don't have to follow it. You don't have to follow it. I'm going to change it. The United States government was not set up that way. You can't just wave the wand and say, or the pen and the phone, I guess, in this case, and just make things out of thin air. Here's a law. Everybody does it. Except for you. You don't have to do it. This is the way it's going to work. Just kidding. That's a terrible system to live in because how do you know one day to the next what you're supposed to do? You're at the mercy of a person, and you're not following a law. People that founded this country warned about that. That's why they set it up the way they did. And so I think this is dangerous on a lot of levels.
Yeah, it is. And I think it goes beyond just deciding to change a law. Legally in this country, there are ways to undo certain laws and enact new ones. What they're doing is they're just basically picking and choosing, like, this is how I want to apply the law to you because you're showing me more favor. And this is how I'm going to apply it to you because I don't like you very much. So you're not going to get the benefits you're asking for. It really is just complete lawlessness. And now illegal immigrants, people who flagrantly broke this law, the law of our nation, are going to be getting government benefits. We've already read the stats about how much of a burden they are financially on the country. Immigrants are supposed to be selected for the benefit they can bring to the country and not just brought in out of pity. And it sounds all nice to maybe rescue people from bad situations, but that's not the nation's job. The nation's job is to bring in people who will better the nation, and that's not what we're seeing right now. This article also goes on and says that 49% of maids, 47% of taxi drivers and chauffeurs, 33% of butchers and meat processors, and 35% of construction laborers were foreign-born. A lot of those you can imagine possibly being illegal or even in another way taking jobs that people actual Americans could be having right now, but we're letting so many come in. They're taking all of those more entry-level type jobs and people are unemployed. Why do we have such a gigantic unemployment problem? Well, there are people who do come here and they seek to work. Even if they're not following all the nation's laws, they still want to work and stay here. And in the meantime, we have Americans, 100 million or so, unemployed.
Yeah. And sometimes people that are in favor of illegal immigration will say, well, then who's going to do those jobs? Well, why don't the people that aren't working do those jobs?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not bad jobs.
No.
A job's a job. And so it is interesting that the write-up is at the Washington Examiner. Census record 42.4 million immigrants, 23% of school kids, and Muslims the biggest jump. Pretty eye-opening. You can read the rest of that there. Before we close, let's talk about something more fun. More fun and exciting than that story. You ever wonder where the name of certain candies came from?
Yes.
Now, here you go. I've got some answers for you. Hershey's Kisses. Legend has it that the sound and movement of the machine that plopped the chocolate on the conveyor belt way back in 1907 reminded the workers of a kiss. That's why they called them Hershey's Kisses. I have wondered about that because they don't a kiss is sort of I don't know what it would look like. I guess if it looked like a pair of lips,
right,
it would make more sense. But I had wondered why they called it that. And that's not the reason that I had thought. Three Musketeers candy bar. When this candy debuted in 1932, the name actually made sense. The package used to contain three separate bars with different fillings, chocolate, strawberry, and vanilla.
Oh, I like that a lot.
Yeah, why don't they go back to that? Milk Duds. These little clumps of yum were originally intended to be perfectly round, but in 1926, they kept coming out wrong, hence duds. So I called them Milk Duds. It didn't work.
Nice.
There you go.
Some weird-looking clumps now, not perfect balls.
The last one here, Snickers. the Mars family, who brought you the Snickers bar in 1930, owned several race horses. Their favorite, Snickers, died just before the new candy bar launched, so it's named in his honor.
Oh.
So whenever you're eating a Snickers bar, it is because of a dead horse. Something to think about.
I really thought it had to do with the type of laugh, but I guess not.
No. Yeah, I guess that would be something that would be more commonly thought of as well. But some interesting things there as far as the way the candy was named. One other thing of note here, you know, you have dreams occasionally. Everybody does. And sometimes people wonder if they mean something. Who knows? Very rarely do they, I guess. But they've done some studies on dreams here. And they say that dreams sometimes are like free therapy for you. Instead of paying somebody to talk through all your issues, the dream takes care of it. They say sometimes our brains make us relive traumatic events in nightmares, which just seems cruel, but this can act as a form of exposure therapy, slowly helping you better deal with the event over time.
Oh.
Not sure if that's true, but that's what they think. And they say nightmares can help you face less concrete fears, too, by presenting your generalized stress in a more tangible form, like, say, a monster. Your brain copes with the memory of this monster better than abstract anxieties. Not sure about that, but okay, that's what their study says.
Stress monster sounds somewhat terrifying, actually.
It does. I haven't had a dream about a monster in years. More when you're a kid, I guess. They say sad dreams. Following a 2015 study, researchers at the University of Turku in Finland claimed that nightmares could also be a useful tool for diagnosing early onset depression, as the two often go hand in hand. I don't know about that either. Seems like kids have nightmares more than adults do. Seems like it's more common. And I don't think kids are having early onset depression, but...
Hopefully not. Yeah, I've had some nightmares, and actually, now they're pretty realistic. Obviously, when I was younger, there was no chance of any of them ever happening. But now, I wonder if I'm going to have a day that resembles one of my nightmares, because they do seem pretty lifelike.
You ever had, you were recently married, have you had any anxiety dreams about being married?
Yeah, probably.
I used to have this one that would occur occasionally where I was getting married, but it was to somebody else.
Oh.
And I was always thinking, like, why shouldn't I be marrying my wife, in my real life wife? Like, she would be in the audience, and I'd be like, but it just seems like, as if I was making this mistake and marrying the wrong person. I would have that one every once in a while. I haven't had it so much anymore that I've been married a while, but for some reason that was my anxiety dream.
Yeah, I think I've had a couple where something bad would happen to my wife, which is horrible, of course. And yeah, it's not the best. I don't enjoy those very much.
People often have, I've heard other people say this too. I've had these where I dream I'm back in school again and I'm going to class and I realize, like, I haven't been here all semester and I don't know even what, like, the assignments are, and there's a test, and then you wake up and you're like, oh man, I'm glad that's not real. That seems like a common one for people.
Yeah, or being at some sort of a club and being asked to give a presentation and you've never been to that club before. That's happened to me. And then right when I'm walking up there to give a presentation that I haven't prepared and didn't even know I was supposed to give, I wake up, thankfully.
Yeah. I've had the dreams, too, where I want to do something, but I can't because my eyes are closed. Like, I'm trying to tie my shoes, and I'm just having a really hard time doing it. And it's before, like, a sporting contest. In this case, the dream is about a basketball game. And everyone's like, come on, come on, you know. And they're waiting for me, and I'm just trying to tie. I cannot tie these shoes. Stress dreams. Very interesting. One more here. They say the same study about dreams leads the author to suggest that it might be possible to treat depression by attacking nightmares directly. So I don't know what that means exactly. But the thing that's interesting about it is the doctor that was in charge of this study, I kid you not, his name is Dr. Sandman.
Perfect for dreaming.
Perfect for dreaming and a study on dreams. They always try to figure out what they mean, and who knows. But I do think probably a lot of it is just your kind of brain filtering through the day's events and the day's activities and that type of thing. And when I was a kid, I used to try to think about something before I'd fall asleep to hopefully dream about it, like something exciting. And very rarely did that work. But I tried.
Yeah, I try that too. I've had some sports dreams, but inevitably it ends up me playing football and getting flattened by a linebacker or something like that. And then I wake up as soon as I get crushed to the ground. So it never turns out the way I'm hoping it will.
Yeah, who knows? It's really, really interesting, the science of dreaming. Some of the things that have going on in the world today, and make sure you listen for the Key of David program and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show that's coming up here in a bit on KPCG, also the Trumpet Hour Wednesday edition today as well. Thanks for joining us today on Trumpet Radio Live. For myself, Dwight Falcon, Grant Turchin, and have a great rest of your Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.